Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You guys, welcome to Just the Sip. It is 2020, and my New Year's resolution was to have a conversation with a celebrity I had no idea about. But I didn't realize that I actually know Nicky Jam really well because half his songs are on my playlist. The amount of text messages I got from people saying, if you f*** this interview up, this dude is a national treasure, an icon. Please welcome Nicky Jam, everybody. Yeah. Dude, this is the first Just a Sip where I refused research. I was like, I don't want to know anything about this guy. I really want to just hear his story because every person that I've, you know, come in contact with that knows I'm doing this interview is like, this dude has a story. This dude is going to rock your world. Where are you from? What was the neighborhood like? And when did you know that music was your
I mean, I was born in Lawrence, Massachusetts. It's a very small town in Massachusetts. And I lived there until I was 10 years old. My dad, he moved to a, you really want to know a story? Like I could.
No, I want to hear reason. Because you hear Massachusetts. You're like, that ain't the hood.
Lawrence is the hood. Lawrence is the hood. Like the hood. Hey, man, have you even heard about Lawrence?
I've never heard of Lawrence.
Imagine that. That tells you how much. I mean, I'm not saying everywhere from Lawrence is a hood. There's good people though, but we got hood.
You got a hood.
You got a hood in Lawrence. Like everywhere got a hood. You know what I'm saying?
So that's why you're scrappy. That's why the comeback was there because you grew up in a place where you had to scrape to get by.
Exactly. And so my dad and my mom, they were going through bad moments in Lawrence, Massachusetts. They were both drug addicts. And my dad, he caught a case, and he bailed himself out. Instead of going back to court, he left as a fugitive to take care of us in Puerto Rico. In those years, the system wasn't connected with Puerto Rico. Today you go to Puerto Rico, they're waiting for
right
you.
Right back.
But back in the 80s, it wasn't like that. So my dad raised us as a fugitive and with drug problems.
Damn.
So I remember that I saw there was like a place that had like a party, and I was 10 years old, and I was looking inside, and I saw people dancing reggae music.
Yeah.
And they were like grinding to it and all that. And it was love at first sight. I'm like, I want this for my life. Like this, I need this. Cause you didn't, in the States, people don't dance. They were dancing like that. They were like dancing, it was like separated.
Yeah. Like, this is grinding.
Even hip hop, this was like, boom, it was sexy. I just love the art of reggae music and, you know, Puerto Rico being the Caribbean and everything. So I was packing on a supermarket, packing groceries, and I used to freestyle with everything that I was, every item I had, you know, like the cheese and the ham and you know who I am. And
Who's freestyling with Velveeta? You.
Yeah. So I was freestyling in the supermarket and I became a little celebrity. And everybody was like, yo, you got to go to aisle 12. There's this little kid that he works there and he be freestyling and all that. A lady came and she signed me. A lady came. She said she wanted to sign me.
Wow.
And I got in her car the same day. Same day she took me to my dad's house with a contract. The same day my dad filmed, he signed the contract. He's like, you want this? I'm like, yeah. All right. And he signed a contract.
12 years old.
12 years old. And I did my first album when I was 12 years old.
Did you ever think that you would be where you are out of that hood? Because I know a lot of times, growing up in the hood myself, people can't see themselves outside of it because everybody stays there.
I mean, at first I was just doing music to have fun, but I would have never thought that I was gonna, you know, make it this far, you know. And it was just something for me to therapy for me to feel good because I was going through a lot of situations. You know, my mom, I didn't see my mom for almost 20 years.
Wow, where was she? Back in Lawrence?
She was back in Lawrence, back in the States, and my dad was a fugitive, so he was scared of contacting my mom. Because my mom being a drug addict and all that.
You didn't know.
You never know what's going to happen. So I didn't see my mom for a long time. So most of my life, I was just trying to, like, be famous and do music to see if my mom could listen
you.
To me and see me. Because I was always trying to get my mom. But my mom, she got deported to Dominican Republic. I mean, it's a hard story. I don't even know what I can say.
You can say it all.
Well,
my mom
stabbed the guy 9 times. Because he was trying to, like, do something to her. And they deported her to the Dominican Republic. And I was really famous. Then I lost everything. I went to jail.
Then we're going to get
out,
there. We're going
to
get
that.
There.
When I come out, I do a promise to God. And I stop drugs. And I start doing good with my music and all that. I go to Dominican Republic when I'm 30-something years old. And somebody tells me, there's a lady outside saying she's your mom.
You haven't seen this woman in 20 years. You're fresh out of jail. You made this pact with God. What was going through your mind when you were walking outside to see if this was your mother?
Just thinking about it, my hands be sweating because it was something that I was waiting for my whole life. And it was like I said, so I wanted to be famous to find my mother, and it worked, you know. And I had a show in Dominican Republic. And when my manager told me, Nikki, you have a show in Dominican Republic, I'm like, okay. This could be it.
Because you knew she was in the Dominican Republic.
No, I didn't know she was deported.
You didn't know she was deported?
I didn't know nothing about her. But I'm thinking she's Dominican. Who knows?
Somebody must know her.
So I went to Dominican Republic. I was even posting on Instagram. I'm going to Dominican Republic. I'm going to do a show. I'm trying to, like, make it. And when it happened, it was like a movie moment. Because my bodyguard was like, there's this woman outside. She's fighting with everybody, saying she's your mom. She wants to see you. Then I go outside. And when I go outside, I see my mom fighting with everybody. And
you just knew it was her?
Automatically, I knew it was her because I remember her voice. And then we hugged, and it was it. From there, we never separated again.
There's so many questions. It's so insane. Was there anger? Was there resentment? Was there any, what were you feeling towards her, and how did you rebuild that relationship with her?
We went into the little room that you go in when you sit down and you wait before you sing. And she was looking at me. It was kind of like an awkward moment because she didn't know how to react. I didn't know how to react. We were just looking at each other. And then she showed me that she showed me a picture, a whole bunch of pictures of flyers and shows.
Yeah.
And she's like, I've been seeing you for years, but I didn't know how to get to you.
Because this is before Instagram. This is before MySpace. Like,
no, when she saw me, yeah. When we got connected.
Finally.
This was in 2015, 16. Actually.
Yeah.
Everything was already there, you know. But
the flyers were from when?
From all my life of doing music.
Crazy,
you know, but she just couldn't. She was in Dominican Republic. She can't go out. She couldn't go out Dominican Republic.
So
she couldn't
know.
Travel because she was deported.
Yeah.
So she couldn't go anywhere to check me out. I went to Lawrence a couple of times to do shows, actually, and she couldn't go to the shows in Lawrence and see me
because she was in the DR.
Because she was in the DR, deported. So, so I just told her that, you know, I told her if she wanted to come with me to Colombia, and those I was in Colombia, and you know, we could like. Get clean together, like I could help her get clean and everything. She's like, no, I've been clean, but I don't want to go over there. I don't think I'm good for you. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, I mean, I told her, I think you don't understand. I mean, my whole life hasn't been good because you wasn't there. I want you with me. So damn. I took her with me to Colombia.
And you guys have been inseparable ever since.
Inseparable. I bought her a house in Dominican Republic. She's living good. You know, she got that loud voice. She's like, "Papi, te quiero. Mijo." You know,
it's crazy how the universe works, because I talk a lot on my shows about second chances, because second chances do exist.
Amen.
But take me back to the beginning of your addiction. When did you start? How were you introduced to drugs?
Okay, well, I saw drugs in my house since I was 5, 6 years old. You know what I'm saying? You don't know what it is to wake up in the morning and see your parents making weird faces because they own drugs.
You know?
The house looked like it was a house with zombies. I'm not going to lie. There's good moments. There's good moments. Even in those moments of drugs and addiction and being poor, there's good moments, you know, but mostly it was bad moments.
I grew up with an aunt and an uncle who were crack addicts.
Yeah.
And they lived two doors down from me. So
you know what I'm talking about.
I know
about.
What you're talking about.
My mom did crack. My dad could.
They're paranoid at
imagine
5 o'clock
seeing
in the morning.
That. Imagine you wake up 4 o'clock in the morning seeing your mom like that, seeing your dad like that. For those who don't know, there's a series in Netflix about my whole story. I acted on it, so y'all could see my whole
What's
story.
What's it called?
It's called The Winner, El Ganador.
Done.
So I went to Puerto Rico. When I was in Puerto Rico doing music and all this, I had my first girlfriend, and she left me for some reason, probably for an older dude, because I was younger than her. She was 18. She was in college. And it was like, it hit me hard because my mom left me. In my mentality, my mom abandoned me. And then this girl left
another
me too.
Another person doing the same thing.
So I saw this guy next to my house, and he was doing cocaine.
Yeah.
So I asked him, like, "Yo, what is that? Can I? Because I was like, I didn't care anymore. Like, you know, I fell in love with somebody, and they left me. So I'm like, and I started doing cocaine when I was 15 years old.
And you did it often.
And I did it often. I went crazy. And I went really crazy. I was already smoking weed when I was 11 years old.
People don't understand that when you grow up in a community where drugs are present, everybody is on drugs.
Yeah, everything is normal.
And everybody knows that everybody's on drugs.
It's normal.
It's normal. Tell me about the highs of it all, because obviously you did it for so long. There must have been, like, when that career first started, the partying, the girls. Like, what was that like to be in that game at that time?
Well, when I was 20 years old, I was in the top of my career in Puerto Rico, obviously locally in Puerto Rico, I was only famous in Puerto Rico. And I was making money. I was making, like, probably, I don't know, $5,000 a show. Imagine 3 shows a Friday, 3 shows a Saturday. That's
raking
a lot
in.
Of money for
it's
a 20-year-old kid in those years.
Yeah.
We're talking about 1999. We're talking about 98, 97.
You 2 Chainz at that point.
Yeah, making all that money. So obviously I was already doing drugs, and I went crazy. All the girls, the drugs,
the excess, the
fame, and I was with Daddy Yankee in that moment, doing music, because we were called Los Cangris.
You guys were a group.
We were a group, and I started messing up too much. I mean, messing up in ways that you don't imagine. Like, you know, like, I wasn't going to TV shows, getting late to places.
Because you were late.
Sometimes they confined me for 2 or 3 days.
Damn.
You know, just the drugs would drive me crazy. And then I caught a case because they caught me with a gun. And it was a problem with attempted murder and all that. They gave me 6 years in Puerto Rico, and I did 3. Because I wasn't really that bad.
Wait, so you're at the top of your game. You're making upwards to $30,000 a week. You're in this hot band. Your name is known everywhere. You're invincible at this point because you think nothing can f-ing touch me.
Exactly.
And you lose it all.
I lose it all because I was a rebel. You know, I didn't care about nothing. You know, I didn't have my mom. And the only girl that I fell in love with, I lost her. So in my mind, in my mentality, life was like,
I didn't care about nothing.
And when you were using drugs, your life doesn't really matter. You know, your mind is like blank. It's not really thinking. So I go to jail, to make the story a little bit shorter, because I don't want to take all your
I'm like, 3. This might be a 4-parter, because 3 years in jail is a long time.
It is. It is. It is.
And you got your shit together in jail.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, really, your soul is kind of dead when you're in jail. I mean, it's not like the Tupac story. They tell you Tupac was doing music inside, yeah, and he was ready when it come outside. Now, when I was in there, I didn't care about nothing. You know, I didn't care about music. I didn't care about nothing. I was just trying to survive, you know, and just trying to just make everybody laugh in there, you know. And,
so you don't get your ass kicked.
Yeah, I don't get my ass kicked and just, you know, just trying to live and survive. So it was hard, you know, because in 3 years, you think 3 years is not too much, but in 3 years, a lot of stuff changes.
It's a lot of stuff, especially in the music game.
Especially in the music game.
Because when you're hot, you're hot. And if you step off for a minute, a month, a year.
Like a year, you probably could still make it. You know what I'm saying? Lil Wayne did it. And then he did a year and he came out, he boom, killed the game.
Bigger than ever.
You know, a year's not too bad, but 3 years is crazy.
But that group that you were in left without you.
Everybody left, but nobody wanted to mess with me because I deserved it. You know, I was a wreck, you know, and nobody wanted to work with me. Everybody was scared because I had so much problems in the streets. I was hanging out with street dudes and doing things I didn't have to do. And
hood wreck.
Hood, like hood crazy things. I was from a part of a hood and I wanted to take care of that hood. You know,
yeah,
what I'm saying? Like put money and take care of it. And those were my peoples and those were my families. And
yeah,
it was
all over the place.
It was all stupid. So one day they call me when I'm in jail. They call me, they call my name. And I'm like, wait a minute. And when they call your name like that, it's because you're leaving. And it was only 3 years. I'm thinking I'm going to do 6 years.
Yeah.
And they're like, man, they calling your name, bro. You leaving. And I'm like, okay. So I just got out and faced reality. You know, faced reality. Everything changed.
The music.
I ain't. Music industry changed. New kids were doing music. The whole the flow changed. The music, the beats, everything changed.
Daddy Yankee is now killing it in America at this point.
He's a king right now. Like, I mean, he was always a king, but he was like bigger than ever. And
I remember when that 99 Gasolina, that came out, and it was every king wear in 2005.
Yeah.
And the reason why I know that because I went to Mexico and they played that every minute.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. And he tried to help me a lot. I mean, he tried to help me a lot. He tried so much. It was
hard-headed.
It was almost embarrassing how much he tried to help me, you know. And I was just hard-headed. I didn't have the mind for it. He, you know what I'm saying?
But you're a Latin dude. A lot of times, Latin dudes and black dudes, the pride always gets us.
Exactly.
It's that fucking pride that we can't take a hand out.
Exactly.
That always gets us.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
There's something that happens in your life, and you get this unbelievable second chance from God, and you take it and you run with it. What was that second chance?
Well, they called me once to go to Columbia to do a show. And I think it was $1,000 in those days. And I needed to pay the rent. I needed money. So I'm like, okay, let's go. You know, they showed me who was going to be on that show. And it was everybody that was killing the game in that moment. And I was like the only old school cat.
Yeah.
You know, in that moment, I was weighing like almost 250 pounds.
Oh.
And it was a disaster. I didn't care about life. I didn't care about nothing.
But you were sober at this point.
No, doing drugs. But I switched drugs, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't doing cocaine that much. I was doing perks.
Yeah.
And I was doing 30 perks a day. So everything, I was working just to maintain that. And
that's,
I don't know if
expensive.
You guys know, but perks is like heroin.
Heroin.
I mean, it has opium. It's the same thing. To get off it, you got to do 3-4 days and get sick and throw up the whole situation.
The sweats, the whole nine yards.
The sweats, everything.
30 a day.
30 a day I was taking. So I was doing little shows and work here and stuff here and little everything just to maintain that
high.
That addiction.
Damn.
So I went to Colombia, and when I got there, I saw that everybody was like, I saw all the new cats that were killing the game. You know, they were up there, and I was like this old retired rapper. You
fat
know what I'm saying?
Cat.
Fat ass.
That
nobody.
Fat alley cat. Nobody, that nobody wants to.
Everybody with. Looking at me like, damn, they look like Bud Light gear. Like you have a big ass face. But the thing is, Colombia is a country where, for them, the music is like they take it serious. Like you know, like for them, I was a legend. In Puerto Rico, I was like, whack.
Washed up.
Old.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the typical American mentality.
100%.
They didn't have that icon mentality. They're like, for them in Puerto Rico, it's like those songs are old.
We need the fresh.
Yeah, that's old. And in Colombia, those are classics.
Done.
So when I went there and I got there, there's a big show and they all performed. But when I was getting to stage, people were screaming like, I was confused. I thought it was somebody in the back coming. I'm thinking, who's coming here? You know what I'm saying? And they were crazy. And I started singing my classic songs, my old songs, all the songs that were hits. But the reason why they were classics is that these were the first big hits.
Yeah.
You understand? Daddy Yankee and Nicky Jam, we started this game with a whole bunch of other rappers back in 92, 93. So
and you didn't realize.
This was 2005. Imagine all the hits I had
before
2005 and 2006. No, this was 2008, actually. 2008. So I got on stage and I felt that love, and it was crazy. That same week, I did like six shows. So I said, you know what? I ain't going back. I'm going to stay in Colombia, man.
They stay in Colombia.
They say I'm a legend. I'm a fat legend.
They cool with this 220?
They don't care that I'm fat. They love me. I'm doing shows here, and it's cheap here to live. I'm going to stay in this country.
Because so you're a king.
I started doing shows. I started doing shows and still having the problem. And one day when I turned to 30 years old, my 30th birthday, I went crazy, and I did so much drugs. And I had a problem. Woke up the next day. And I had a problem with, I don't know how to say it in English.
Mobility.
You
couldn't pick up.
I couldn't move my hands. I couldn't even talk. It was like something weird, something I messed up in my brain.
Because you went that hard the night before.
I went so hard. I think all the years, you know what I'm saying?
It caught up with you.
It caught up with me. So I got scared. So I went to a brain doctor.
A neurologist.
That word is hard for me. But I went there and... even get an appointment with one of those doctors.
It's hard.
You got to wait for a month and all that. So I went there and he looked at me and he said, look, I'm going to tell you this. I don't find nothing. But if you say you feel that, I'm going to tell you this. Or you stop doing drugs, or you die. Simple as that. He told me that and it was a wrap. Okay.
You stop cold turkey.
Yeah. No, I called my dad because my dad already stopped doing drugs years ago. And I'm like, yo, dad, I need you to help me. I want to stop drugs, but I need you to lock me in a room.
And do it.
And help me.
Because he knew the struggle.
He knew how hard it was. So I needed somebody that knew about this, and nobody better than family.
But this is the scary part because I've dealt with this in my own family. When you have two people that are sober and on their programs, and then you have the third person who's still in it, how hard was it for them not to fall off? And even for you, there's probably friends of yours that are still doing the damn thing.
I was staying in a house in Colombia where the guy was still messing around. So my dad said, the first thing you got to do is you got to leave this place, man.
He knew.
Yeah, you got to leave this place because this guy, he's not going to help you with this. He's going to mess you up. So they took me to a different apartment. A guy was good enough to give me an apartment for a couple of months. He locked me in that room, and it was the worst 6 days of my life.
Because you're hallucinating. You're sweating.
You're sweating. Begging. Bones are hurting. When you're cold, you need a blanket. But then you get hot, you don't need that blanket. And it's the worst thing in the world. I tried to escape a couple of times, but I couldn't. And my dad was just just helping me and telling me, every time you suffer, just remember that's how ugly you, that's where you was.
Damn.
You know what I'm saying? You see how you suffering? Imagine how much of a slave you was with those drugs. So when I finally got better, I went out. And, you know, the hard part is not leaving drugs. The hard part is facing the world that you was trying to avoid.
Yeah.
Using drugs.
Yeah.
You know, the truth. It's going back to reality. You know what I'm saying? Like all these skeletons you had in the closet that were made you go back into yeah. that. So people don't understand. It's a whole process. It's not only
it's a psychological.
Drugs, it's you going back to the world. But I think for me it was easier because I was just happy to be alive. So he said I was about to die. The doctor said I was about to die. And I'm over here like my hands were getting better. My movements were getting better. I could have talked a little bit better.
You were feeling yourself.
I was feeling myself. So I stuck myself in the studio and I started doing music. And I realized guys that nobody knew in Colombia that had 5 million views. I'm like, 5 million views?
On YouTube.
On YouTube.
This is like the birth of YouTube.
Yeah, I'm like, 5 million views? Wait a minute. How many people in this country? Like, there's like 65 million people. Like, okay. So I don't need to be a worldwide superstar. If I can make a national hit in this country, if I focus and I work in this country like I live in this country, if I understand the culture and do music just for this country, I can make millions of views and I could probably bounce around the world. And that's what
that's
I did.
What
I focused on the whole country. I went to all the national TV shows. You know, not every time I had, they gave me the break to go in it, but I tried it. I tried.
Yeah, you hustled
and,
it.
And I did one song. It was the video, it cost me like $500. It was called Piensas en Mí. And I was living in a farm that I rented back in a farmhouse that I rented in Colombia. I did the song came out. And a year passed by, and I didn't know about nothing. I just came out that farm, do a couple of shows to survive, come back, pay the rent, be good, you know, chill with the cows and everything. It was so
you went with the land.
It was good. It was so. I mean, there was a cow that literally got his head inside the window where I live, and I gave him food, and he was eating my food every day. Me and the cow, like he was my friend.
Hey.
So for me, no, but I'm going to tell you something. There was nothing more beautiful than that.
I'm trying to imagine the man with the diamond necklaces and like the Vacra tat, the Gucci and the tattoos. And I'm just imagining Elsie, like you living on a farm, you know, like
yeah.
Snow White, just talking to the animals.
Yeah, man. I mean, a big cow will come inside the window like, ooh, and he would. I don't know if it was ooh, but I know it's smooth, but he did ooh for some reason. And he was eating arepas, and in Colombia, they eat arepas. And I was living a good life. And one guy came to me, visit, we was doing a barbecue, and he's like, yo, Nicky, your new song is killing the game right now. It's everywhere. I'm like, my new song?
You had no idea.
I didn't have a song out for a year. I'm like, nah, man, crazy, really. And I got on my phone, I checked the song, it had 1 million views. And I'm like, 1 million views? Oh, that's a lot.
This is something.
Yeah, okay. But it was only big in that city.
Yeah.
Not in the whole country, in that city. But that's enough to do shows. So I called the radio station guy. I went to the radio station and I showed the song to the guys. Like, nah, song is too slow, man. I don't like the song. And I'm like, all right. So some other guy called me and said, yo, we got a show for the people. Can you come and sing for free? And it's a radio station show, and I'll play your music.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm down. So I went over there. It was like 20,000 people. And I got up stage, and everybody was screaming. And, you know, but I was used to that in Colombia because they love me so much. I sang all my classic songs. When I'm about to leave, they started screaming, Piensas en Mí. It was that song.
From a year ago.
So I looked at them and I looked at the DJ. I'm like, do you got it? Like, I don't got it, but I got the song. I play it and you sing over it. I'm like, okay, go ahead. And when the song came out, everybody went crazy and they started singing. I got so much goosebumps and I couldn't sing because I wanted to cry because I haven't had a hit for almost...
It's 20 10, yeah, 15 10 years.
Years, 15 years. So automatically I called the other guy after that. It was a beautiful moment. I called him. I said, hey, I need you to get me on your show that you're going to do for the radio station. I go for free. I'm like, okay. Because I knew if I sang that song there and he saw the reaction of the people,
it was a close.
Automatically it was a done business. So I went over there, I sang my songs, and then I sang that song, and everybody went nuts. And I looked at him and said, that's the song you said it was too slow, bro.
Damn.
You know, like.
And don't you love that moment?
Oh, that's the best moment of
don't
my life.
Don't you fucking love that pretty woman moment where you're like, big mistake.
Look,
huge mistake.
I've got Grammys and everything, and it's not better than those moments. Those moments are the moments.
Are the best.
Those are the best moments in the world.
But you are that artist that's the people's artist. 19.9 million YouTube subscribers. Also, the Bad Boy single, 36 million views in 1 week.
Amen.
We're talking about one of the most anticipated movies of this year.
Yes.
I personally think people were ready to see you and Daddy Yankee get back together.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Just like they were ready to see Martin Lawrence and Will Smith together on this Bad Boy movie.
For sure.
They were ready to see Daddy Yankee. It was all crazy because, I mean, after 20-something years, me and Daddy Yankee together, after 20-something years, the Bad Boy's doing another movie, and we both on a soundtrack of that movie.
Of the movie.
So it can't be crazier than that.
But, again, Latin men are like black men, where the pride gets in your way. How did you put that pride aside and sit down with Daddy Yankee and be like, yo, we need to get this back together. This whole thing needs to just be resolved.
Well, it wasn't hard. It wasn't hard because Daddy Yankee's always been, like, really good to me. And we fixed all our problems way before everything. But I really wanted him. I really wanted to, like, way before this song.
Yeah.
Like, we fixed our problems probably, like, I don't know, like 7-8 years.
And it was cool.
And we was just, okay, you over there, you over here. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know,
it's territorial.
It's easy to say you sorry when you need something, when you're not in your best moment. So my mentality is I'm going to work hard. So when I go back and say sorry, you're like, now I believe you're sorry.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
You big now. You got your, he always was good to me, but I really wanted to work with him when I earned it.
Yeah.
Because
you didn't want a favor.
You can't go playing baseball for the Yankees, let's say, and then you just leave for 10 years and you come back like, yo, I want to play with you again.
You can't do that.
Nah, but that's not the way it works. Yeah. So I need to earn my spot, and that's what I did. So Yankee always been there with me. We did a couple of remixes before this song. We was okay. We was good. We sat down. He's always been my mentor. He's always been the guy that showed me what's the right way. I mean, don't get it twisted. That a Yankee was from the streets. You know what I'm saying? And he has his story, too. You know what I'm saying? But he's always a smart guy. And he knew he wanted way better than being in the streets and being...
Just being
like his friends that died or in jail. So, you know, he was always a smart one.
But let me ask you this question because, you know, being from the streets myself, I always see, you know, I went to school and college with all these guys that came from the hood. Yeah. And the minute they come from the hood, they take all four of their posse with them. And it's always the posse that f***ed up for people.
Always, always.
How hard was it for you not to take the posse? Or did you take the posse?
Well, in my stupid moment, a lot of stupid things I did was because I had the posse.
The posse was fucking up.
The posse always, you know, hyping everything up. Because, you know, and they hype you up. And they're like, you going to let this motherfucker? You know what I'm saying? And you're like, hell no. And you probably was going to let him.
No, 100%. You know what I'm saying? Like, 100%.
I wasn't really that mad. But he now that he's talking to me, like, hell no, man.
So now you got to check him, motherfucker.
Now you got to check him, motherfucker. And then you got to fight and all that.
It's a whole thing.
And then you mad for no reason because some other guy was mad. Like, you're like, why am I mad? I was like,
The person who ain't even in the money is the one who's mad in the posse.
And then you go to jail and he's chilling outside laughing at you like, hey, yo, man, what's wrong with you, man? You didn't lock you up. You know? I did all that, man. I went through all that stupid stuff. I'm just not trying to get, my story is really long, so I didn't really want to drive you crazy here. I try to resume it the best I can.
But my story
is it looks unreal, man.
It's all in this Netflix show, Winners.
Yeah, it is.
It's all
Winners.
Sitting there.
They're airing it in Telemundo right now.
Yeah.
All around the world is on Netflix. In the States, people got to watch it in the Spanish channel because Netflix did a business with Telemundo.
No. The thing I don't like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is, you know, reggaeton music is such a big moment now. You hear it in everybody's music, pop artists, you know, hip-hop artists, urban artists around America. But I feel like you guys don't get the recognition that you guys deserve when it comes to accolades and Grammys and all those things. Are you upset about that at all?
I mean, it's normal, you understand, because our music is, I think hip-hop went through that too.
Hip-hop went through that as well.
You went to that, and it's about getting organized and fighting for what you believe in. And hip-hop did that. they fought and they won. You know what I'm saying? Right yeah. now, they because I remember that every year of the Grammys in hip hop, when Kendrick deserved it, they didn't give it to Kendrick. They gave it to somebody else.
Album of the Year went to Bon Iver again.
And like, who's this guy? And then somebody else. And then, you know, the Academy, for some reason, not really friendly with the urban street music. For yeah. some reason, they really like the what they call what's art, and they don't understand that art is anything that makes people want to dance and sing and have fun. That's art.
And if you ever been,
if you could get somebody off their chair, come on, that's power.
It's power.
You know, so I mean, for them, art is music that has instruments and has a band and
there's a tone,
and it's opera and it's professional music, whatever you want to call it. No, man. Music is any melody that makes you want to dance and have a good time and sing and has a message. They don't understand that.
They don't understand it.
You know, and they go for like, yeah, just because you have 50 million views on a song doesn't mean that it's art. Like, what do you mean? Like, if everybody's clicking on a song, it's because everybody likes the song.
Wants to consume it.
And everybody likes the song means that it's art. You know, so yeah. So I get it. I understand what they mean, what they say, but I just think us as Latinos and people that do reggaeton music, we got to do a better job in getting together and fighting for what, yes. what we believe. Like this year, me, Daddy Yankee, J Balvin, and a couple of other colleagues, we boycotted the Grammys, the Latin Grammys, because we wasn't getting the recognition that we deserve. But a lot of other artists
didn't do the boycott. But
so
do you care as an artist that if you get the accolade? Because I feel like when I look at your body of work, the people love it. They give you the recognition.
I got a Grammy, you know what I'm saying? But
you're like, I'm
and
good.
I was surprised. I could be like, I don't care. Deuces. You know what I'm saying? But but you know, I understand it. There's nothing better than you know, doing art and doing your art. And getting what you deserve for the art that you did. And I think, like I said, we got to do a better job, everybody teaming. But at the end of the day, if you got on stage and there was thousands of people singing your songs, you won.
You won.
You won. That's the biggest prize. If you sell tickets when you do shows and concerts, you won. You know, I know artists that never got one Grammy, and they're the biggest singers in the world.
Yeah.
So it's not even about that. You know, it's not about that, but you do want your recognition. You know, you want that. Because I told my dad, like, Daddy, I didn't bring you no trophies in school, but you got a couple of Grammys there, billboards, you know what I'm saying? I got
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
These are trophies, you know what I'm saying?
I you got good.
Trophies, yeah.
Now, it's 2020. You're on top of your game. What was it like being in that car with Martin Lawrence and Will Smith?
I mean, it was unreal. I still don't believe it. You know, I was sitting down for 4 hours in a car with Martin Lawrence and Will Smith. Not a lot of people could say that in their lives.
No, not a lot of people can say that.
That's a beautiful story to tell your grandkids, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that tells you about all the everything that I've told you about my story. And then you see that I'm sitting down in a car with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, and you're like, God is big.
God is big. What was it like when you got that phone call? And did you even have to audition? Because I feel like a dude like you, it's like a shoe-in. They're like,
he grew up in the hood. We good. Like, I mean, they know I had the follows and all that. And sometimes that's important. But, you know, they want to know if I could act. So I was with Will Smith and we did the World Cup song in Russia.
Yeah.
Because I got him in the World Cup song. Because I was like, I'll do the World Cup if I could get Will Smith in.
Yeah.
That was me being smart.
I see. No, I'm learning. I'm learning.
And I knew he never did the World Cup song before. Nothing
you are
like
Bobby
that.
F-ing Fischer just with the chest, like, just the chest, you know, like, you know, making
so
the moves.
I had my manager is a very good friend of Miguel, that's Will Smith's manager. And I'm like, yo, let's get Will Smith inside. He was happy like he was nobody. He was happy like he wasn't. Like, I'm getting a World Cup. Hell yeah, let's do this. And I'm like, oh my God.
That's why he works all the time, because he goes into it like he's a nobody.
Yeah. So when we're doing this song and we're in Russia and we're happy and we're doing this, he's like, yeah, we're doing a Bad Boy movie. He knows I'm almost 40 years old.
And you're like this, crafty.
Like,
this is where the crafty comes in.
So I'm like, yeah, I would love to be in that movie. He's like, okay, you do the casting and you do good, it's yours.
Damn.
And I'm like, wasn't that easy. Well, he is Will Smith, and I'm not. I'm
he is Will Smith.
I'm like, all right, I'll go to the casting. I'm gonna do this. I went to L.A., you know, and I did the casting in front of these three ladies. It was like all serious, that poker face.
Yeah.
And I did it. I got the part, and I'm Suelo, and I'm a bad boy inside that movie. One of the villains in the movie.
That is nuts. Yeah. Not only the part, but the song on the soundtrack, reuniting with Daddy Yankee for what's going to be one of the biggest collaborations this year. How crazy is it that your life is just on this wave? Like, do you ever step back and think to yourself, like, who the f*** am I to get this? Like, or like, what did I do?
I do every day. Every day and every day. Because I lost everything or once. I'm grateful for everything that God and people, my people, has given me. And I'm just, you know, always humble about it and always working like I'm about to lose everything.
That's, you know, the key.
And I think that's what makes me successful, and that's what's making me getting all these good things and having a good attitude about everything. Because back in the days when every bad thing that happened to me happened because I really had a bad mentality.
Yeah.
You know, but once you got good energy, you bring good stuff to you. And when you do good, good stuff will come to you. So I'm just happy. I mean, my new album is out. Intimo came out in November. Killing the Game right now, the album. And I got this new single with Daddy Yankee, Muevelo.
It's the
It's number three right now in the world.
It's the
And the movie, and I'm here with you having an interview with one of the best guys on TV.
Okay,
man.
Hold on.
You
know, hold on. Now say that in Spanish so people know it's real.
Estoy con uno de los mejores tipos de la televisión aquí ahora mismo, bro.
Yes. Un aplauso. Sí. Sí. Now, I just have one more question. I'm going to save the shadiest question in my arsenal for last. Because I'm going to be honest with you. If I was as talented as you, if I could sing, if I was this famous, if I looked like you, because you're a swaggy ass dude.
You know what I'm saying?
I'd be tearing up some hoes in the streets. Okay? I would be a big tornado.
Oh my God.
I'd be eating bitches up because I know I've traveled with a musician before. Yeah. I've seen how it goes in the back. I've seen how, I'm telling you right now, it was like in zombie land. You have to fight these bitches off to get through, to get to the room. Like, people are like going through vents. Like, girls are coming through back doors. But you're in a relationship.
I'm in a relationship because I did all that crazy stuff you said. I jumped around and all that. All kinds of girls, big, tall, anything you say, you name it.
They were coming through.
They were all coming through, but it was a lonely life, you know? It feels kind of lonely. I mean, I did it for so long. It came to a moment where I felt like every time I was with a girl, it was like that they were leaving a piece of that bad energy on me.
You couldn't get it off of you.
I can't get it off of me. So I was like, I need to change my life. And I did this video almost a year ago. And I met the love of my life. You know, she's from Louisiana, from where you from?
Southern girls, baby.
Yeah. And she has the most beautiful eyes I ever seen. And I said, she's going to be my girl. And she's my girl.
And you've been together for how long?
For a year.
Was it the first time that you had found love since that girl broke your heart when you were...
I'm going to say yes.
And what's it feel like to finally mend that heart?
It feels good. It feels like God has finally given me everything that I wanted.
You gonna marry this one?
Yeah, I think I'm marrying
this. You gonna put a ring on that?
I mean, yeah, I don't want, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if she's looking right now. You know what I'm saying? I don't know, but yeah, I think I'm marrying her, yeah.
All I'm saying is, I see that f***ing diamond necklace. You better not be cheap on that ring.
Nah. I'm not gonna be cheap.
You better come through.
I'm going hard.
This man just took the sip, and it was my favorite sip of 2020, and it probably will be of this show. Thank you so much.
Hey, love you, man.
I appreciate it, man.
God bless, man.
Much love. Vanessa, you know when people get second chances in this world all the time, Lindsay Lohan, I'm not going to say your name, and they f*** them up.
Yeah.
They really do ruin them. And sometimes there's this 1 out of 100 that gets that second chance and not only does it, but kills it. And this man kills it.
I mean, that story, I'm sure there's even more to that story than what we heard in our 45 minutes. It was incredible. And the fact that he has come so far and is still so humble and so funny and so sweet is like mind blowing.
Bitch, the fact that he's alive
is mind blowing.
It's mind blowing.
That's true. That's true.
But I love this story because breaking the cycle is hard, mm-hmm. especially when both parents are part of the cycle. And it's crazy whenever you think about somebody who grew up in that environment and who grew up in a trap house.
Right. It puts life in perspective, especially for people who, I mean, everyone's got problems, but then when you hear someone's story like that, it really puts your life into perspective that what you can overcome
yes.
and like what is a big problem versus a bigger problem
100%.
And what a real challenging life is like.
Yeah.
I think it really kind of can slap you into reality to hear that someone can overcome so much
no.
and be so successful. And he deserves it.
For sure.
You know, he's talented. He's worked his ass off. But it's a pretty amazing story.
You know, growing up in the hood myself, you know, I run across these people that I grew up with. And a lot of times they have this, well, this was the hand I was dealt attitude.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, no, of course.
Oh, no, these were the cards that I was dealt. And I was very lucky because I was raised by my mother. My mother was not an addict. My mother did not abuse anything, mm-hmm. you know. Some of the other people that I grew up with in my life weren't as lucky. So for the longest time, like I had this, you know, I was lucky thing, but I don't think it's about luck. I think it's about seeing your life mm-hmm. and realizing that there's more out there. So, you know, when I hear these are the cards I was dealt, this is the hand that I was, you know, handed, I don't believe that anymore.
It's having that heart to kind of persevere past that, right? Like 100%. He had his come to Jesus moment. And there's people there are people in the world that sit and feel bad for themselves and stay in those moments. And
yeah.
then there's people who change those moments and push past.
100%.
And like that's exactly what he did.
And by the way, no shade to Puerto Rico, because Puerto Rico is one of the most beautiful
yes,
countries
I've been there too.
I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. It's old school. It has so much culture and so much life. But the one motherfucking thing I ain't trying to do in Puerto Rico is go to jail.
Right.
Okay? I have seen Locked right. Up Abroad.
Yeah.
I have enjoyed From Afar
yeah. Yeah.
where I can rewind my yeah. DVR.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine going to jail. I mean, listen, the jail I have in my head and my fantasies is like Oz with Chris Maloney.
Right. right.
But I know that doesn't exist in Puerto Rico.
It doesn't exist in Puerto Rico. No.
3 years in jail is a long time.
That is a long time.
3 years in jail for a musician is a long time because, you know, you have these Kodak Blacks, mm-hmm. you have these Tekashi 6969s, maybe mm-hmm. one more 6ix9ine, I'm not sure. And you have all these people who kind of lose it. But mm-hmm. it's about the people, sometimes it's about the people around you.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get to that. You know what I mean?
Right. But I also like how honest he was about his time in jail. Like when he was like, it wasn't that Tupac moment. I was still angry. Like it wasn't until he got out of jail
that he had
his moment, right? Like he was still angry, still just trying to get by, he said, I lost my soul. So jail was like his, like on his road of his like darkest path, right?
It
wasn't
bottom.
Even like, oh, this was my moment to kind of come clean and,
no.
you know, change my life.
Because he got out of jail and was doing the same
yeah.
things.
And he still hit rock bottom after that.
Has anybody been to jail other than Vanessa here? You guys, thank you for listening this week. Remember, to see this video of this podcast, you can head over to the E! News YouTube channel and click on Just the Sip. I need you to like, rate, comment. Let me know what you like, what you don't like, if my facial expressions are wrong, if I'm talking too much. I don't care. Just tell me in the comments what the fuck you want me to change. And you can follow me at The Lady Sitter. You guys will be right back next week with more Just the Sip.